Welcome up to the Level Up Podcast. You'll notice I'm not Wade Reed. I am Aaron Pascucci. Wade is out doing coffee things this week. Today, I'm joined by our producer, Chris Lindstrom.
Hello, hello.
Guest today, who is Aubrey Mowers of Blue Heron Coffee.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I thought we'd open up by just having you tell us a little bit about who Aubrey is, maybe what your relationship with coffee was before, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Absolutely. So who Aubrey is, that's the question.
It is.
Let's start with the relationship to coffee.
Perfect.
I've been drinking coffee since I was 2 years old.
one of those families.
One of those families. Wanted to be part of the conversation. My mother has a large family and many sisters, and they would all get together any time of the week, any day of the week, and sit around and talk with each other about everything, life, and I just wanted to be part of that. So, you know, what they had in their cup, I wanted in my cup. So pretty much I've been drinking coffee in some form, you know, a little bit here and there my whole life. Loved it.
So we at Level Up have a little joke, and we say, did coffee choose you or did you choose coffee? And it sounds a little bit like coffee might have chosen you.
Coffee totally chose me. I definitely have to, like, you know, just be mindful of that. Coffee chose me and doesn't like me very much. That's another thing. Coffee at night is, I might take a few sips of the coffee we have here, but.
Oh, sure.
You know, the caffeine, it doesn't really, you know, go well with me, but.
Sure.
I love it. I've loved the flavor of coffee. I actually love decaf, which is kind of like a, you know, hot topic. I know some people are like decaf, you know, die before decaf. And
as soon as you mentioned that, I was like, well, we're going to have to talk about decaf a little bit because it's been a thing. And Wade actually has a great relationship with decaf.
Yeah.
And I can't remember.
It gets a bad rap.
Was there something specific, Chris, that came up like one or two shows ago?
Yeah, I think we did talk about decaf and, you know, talk about some of the processes and that, but I think the main message that we got to was that decaf is so wildly better than what it used to be.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
And that now the quality that you can get, like, you know what, it is a great legitimate option, because if you love coffee, and yeah, maybe you get hit harder by caffeine than another person, you want something. Because it is a great way to end off a day with those flavors and that, you know, just comforting warmth or something else. It's nice to have that option. And it's
right
with the new, like, water processes and other things. It's so much better.
I was going to say, we haven't heard about a Swiss water process in a long time or anything else of that nature. And we'll have to hook you up with an old slideshow we did.
Okay.
But in one of the previous iterations, we did a whole kind of lecture on decaf, and Wade did a spectacular job. Yeah. And we brought in a little bit of specialty decaf that we roasted and put out and tasted there. So,
yeah. And what I hear is that the issue with decaf is that it does stale so quickly that a lot of people are the issue they have with decaf being of a subpar quality is just because it has the capability of staling so quickly.
Well, and then you're probably not going through as much volume in a shop. So the combination of both of those at the same time
exactly
leads to neutral mid coffee.
Right.
Even if it was great to begin with.
Right, exactly. Not tasting it at its optimum.
Yeah. And and most people who are picking up decaf are probably not getting anything close to fresh coffee at that point. A lot of my experience comes from working at Pete's, and we used to bag up the coffee at the end of the night and then put it out the next morning. And it never occurred to me back then other than, oh, this is a little odd. I wonder how long this lasts good. And everybody else is like, it's dry. It's good. It's not going to mold or anything. I'm like, okay, I guess so.
Right. Which is not the only thing that would ruin, you know, the experience of coffee.
Right.
So,
Well, and totally. Kind of speaking of like, you know, mid coffee, what was your journey from, you know, tasting as a kid to like, what was your eye opening moments when it came to tasting coffee as you grew up and tried different things?
Well, and I want to interject one spot.
Oh, sure. Please.
I want her to start a specific spot there.
Oh, yeah, go definitely. For it.
So we all probably have a memory of what we started drinking and what our earliest memories of coffee were.
Yeah.
And mine was actually, it was instant coffee. It was a little tin that my mom used to get. And
was it the cappuccino?
Yes. It was, hers was the French vanilla one.
Yeah, the French vanilla cappuccinos.
And
I remember those.
And that was her little treat. And then we ended up with a very poor espresso machine for a long time. And so, but yeah, that I still have that memory and I can still taste that coffee. So
oh, 100%.
I'm curious what you started with there in your household.
Well, so our household was very much a tin of Folgers underneath the sink. Just this large.
The normal storing spot for coffee in the house.
Horrible. But, you know, you don't know any better. Right. So that was coffee to me for the longest time. And it got to a point where, you know, coffee was just such, I wasn't an early riser. Hated going to school. You know, if I went to school, I felt like I deserved a day off. But my mother would go to work halfway through the school day, and on the way, or when I would get home from school, there would be a half drinking cup of coffee on the counter, and I would just think, score. So my
awesome.
Relationship to coffee, even, you know, just knowing what I know about coffee now, it's just, it got worse. I feel like it just went down before it went up. But yeah, coming from that, just kind of getting what I could, essentially,
mm-hmm.
Where I could. And then, you know, I feel like we've all done our big coffee chain, you know, got to have your big
For
coffee
sure.
chain coffee in the morning, which is one of the big reasons I wanted to start my own business.
Mm.
Because I really feel like the kids that are growing up these days think that coffee is synonymous with those big chain
oh
names.
Sure.
Like Kleenex is tissue and uh-huh. those, you know, that's coffee. And it really is just pumps and pumps of syrup and
yes.
flavored syrup. And, you know, coffee can actually be a very healthy treat.
For sure.
And help with a lot of ailments and, but not when you treat it like that. So I want to educate kids as they're, I don't want to say kids, but you know, like when you start getting into the drinking age of coffee, you know, you're 16, 17 years old, you start driving, you go through a drive-through, you get your mocha choca kind of thing.
That's an amazing perspective on it because I bet you most of us start really drinking coffee right around that age. Mm-hmm. My earliest memories were going down to, you know, our coffee shop, Java Joe's, because they were one of the few places open late as a teenager that you could go to. Mm-hmm. And so we all drank really, you know, sometimes bad cappuccinos with vanilla and hazelnut and everything, you know, can think under the sun. Although I will say I'll still get a Chaplain any day. That's a nice treat to me from them.
What's a Chaplain?
I believe, if I'm remembering, it's been a little bit,
okay.
But it's like steamed chocolate milk, it's iced chocolate milk with espresso into it.
Oh, okay.
So, and then I think they probably add something else to it, but
yeah.
If you
almost like an iced mocha.
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
But it's like, you know, it doesn't quite have that steamed milk and mocha right. syrup. It's something different.
Yeah.
So
cool.
But yeah, that I don't know that I've ever seen that raised anywhere. And that's what they say is like, if you want to change something, you got to start with the kids there.
I just think it's ingrained. It's hard to get something, you know, that's ingrained or that is a core memory or like, a lot of people do things just for the nostalgia factor. So you can go to these places your entire life just because that little, you know, that feeling that you get because that's where you've always gone. It's hard to kind of calibrate that or kind of convince somebody that that's not the only option.
For sure.
So
that's really interesting. How do you see yourself fulfilling this goal?
Well, actually, the reason that came to me is because I did go to those places for coffee, and I would get the flavors and things like that. But I was also at one point on a weight loss journey.
Uh-huh.
So I had to cut these things out of my life, these extra sugar, extra, sweeteners, and having black coffee.
Yep.
You really go, oh, wow, do I even like coffee? Or, or is this even good coffee?
Sure.
So you, at that age, you might be like, well, I just don't like coffee. But to understand that there's other options out there, there's coffee that's roasted differently. It's not all, doesn't all taste like an ashtray, that kind of thing.
So I think we can stop beating around the bush here, because all of us will probably gone to Dunkin' Donuts and Starbucks and,
for sure,
Tim Hortons and all the other things around here. I'll say this, I think any of us would, if we want coffee, we'll stop by and grab something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to grab black coffee from Starbucks. It doesn't do it for me. It's not even worth it.
Right.
So I see where you're coming from. Did you grow up in Rochester here?
I did. I mean, spent a couple years down south when my mother decided she didn't want to do the winters anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to North Carolina. But when we moved back, we moved one street over from where we used to live.
Oh.
So literally right back in the game. Felt just like a long vacation and then back to work. But I missed it. I'm a northeastern girl. I really am.
There's something about it. Like, I mean, North Carolina with the, it's the rapid growth.
Yes.
That was going on there. Were you in one of the major, the Triangle or?
Yes. So we were in Asheboro, which is close to Greensboro.
Okay.
So like the Charlotte, Greensboro area.
Yeah, because Charlotte, the speed that it grew, and I remember visiting it once and visiting a few years later. I'm like, oh my God.
Yes.
It was so rapid. Like, we think things are changing fast here. And, the expansion was almost mind-boggling with how fast it was going out and the neighborhoods were changing.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you come back, it is a whole different thing because they're almost shook by it.
Mm-hmm.
That they're still trying to figure out, who are we as a whole place? And I think we're
Charlotte specifically.
Like, yeah, the Charlotte area.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of jarring. Like, seemed like the neighborhoods were almost like shooken up by it at the time. And then coming back here, did you see it differently having been away? Or was it just like comforting coming back home?
It was, well, so I feel like it was comforting because we were coming back to the large family that we left. When we came back, we were still pretty much the only ones that had moved away.
Mm.
So we came back to family. But it's the pace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am a let's rate of play. Like, let's get going, walk in with a purpose, doing stuff. And it's a completely different lifestyle down there. As I'm getting older and older, I'm envious of that. But yeah, when I was younger, I was like, no, we gotta, you gotta move. We gotta get going. This has to take in 10 minutes, not an hour. If you're grocery shopping or whatever. So, I felt that as a kid. I mean, I don't know if that's something that's intrinsically like a Northeastern type of thing, but
I mean,
I definitely had it. It was in me.
It is and it isn't. I moved out to California, which ramps up that pace like a hundredfold.
Oh, okay.
Everybody out there, I mean, that's where the side hustle like started and it migrated. Everybody had a full-time job. Everybody has a side hustle. Everybody's working on something else in addition to their side hustle. And if you're not, like, you're not doing enough, you know? So, and I know you mentioned you've got how many jobs?
Well, currently 5. Currently.
Currently.
So she slowed down a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about that, Aaron.
That's the max that's the max, and it needs to, something needs to give. So funny enough, during the pandemic, it was nothing. It was no jobs. I had been a hairstylist for most of my adult life. My husband and I met when I was 16, and we had our first when I was 17.
Oh.
So, it was about what's going to, being a hairstylist was not my decision. It was like, this is what you need to do. And it, at least it was close enough to the art that I, you know, was getting close to figuring out what I wanted to do in that field. And it was something that was where I could express myself artistically and also make a living for my family. It was just that head down kind of thing, you know, put your head down. And almost 20 years later, it's March of 2020 and everything shuts down. Salons were one of the last things to reopen.
Sure.
You know, everybody had long hair towards the summer that year. And I did not want to come back. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was nervous to come back. I had gotten a, you know, whatever type of anxiety or germophobia I had during that pandemic just kind of skyrocketed.
Ramped it way up.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And even then, we still didn't really have a good hold on what was going
on. Sure.
And but things were opening back up. And I was like, what are we all doing here? You know, so I stayed home with the kids and homeschooled actually for a year and a half. And when they went back to school, I said, okay, what is it that I want to do? And in between those two times, being a little depressed, I'm sure everybody had a lot of that going on, I started hanging out at local coffee shops. And it was just the best part of my day.
So where were you? Which ones?
This one specifically. I've got
the duck.
The duck. I've got an ugly duck sweater on right now.
Ooh, shout
representing.
Out. Is Expo still going on?
Oh, Chicago?
Yeah.
I think it just ended.
Okay.
Yeah,
it would have been this past weekend.
Shout out to Bob, who was posting.
Well, actually, my first foray into specialty coffee wasn't even in Rochester. It was in Ithaca. We went as a family for our first trip post-pandemic, and we're in downtown Ithaca, and we came across the...
Gimme?
Gimme, yeah.
And shout out to Gimme Coffee. What a great locations they have in Ithaca, too.
Oh, yeah.
And what a great intro for you.
Yes. I feel very lucky that was like my first, you know, post-Starbucks-ish, you know, place to check out, and came back to Rochester and said, I don't live, you know, I live in Chi-Lai, and as close as we are to the city, if you don't choose to go downtown, you don't have to, and you'll never get to see the amazing places and things to do down there because you'll just be in your little bubble. And I wanted to get out of that bubble, and Ithaca kind of like opened my eyes to that. And so I started just going everywhere.
Yes.
Literally everywhere. Trying all new different restaurants, cafes. I don't think there's a cafe I haven't been to.
So when you say you're going everywhere, you mean everywhere, city center, downtown area here, or just in general?
Oh, so, you know, city center, downtown, what does Rochester have to offer me? Why am I not exploring my own backyard? Why do I feel like I have to go to New York or Boston or Ithaca? That was our first time being in Ithaca, and it's only 2 hours away. And I was like, why haven't I tried to be here before?
And Chris will be the first one to tell you that Rochester has amazing stuff to offer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so much stuff.
Absolutely. And I also love that because, you know, having had the pleasure of, you know, being an advocate for Rochester, being a place that's worth being, spending time and contributing. And that's the part I'm really excited to talk about is like, once you love it so much, like wanting to contribute, wanting to be a part of it, not just talking about it, but actually being involved changes you, which is, it's one of those amazing things that you can take a step back from like, oh, exploring has turned me into maybe more of the person I wanted to be, or
right.
this. And I'm kind of wondering, when you got to the chance to really dive in, what was that like starting to learn about Rochester? Like, how did that hit you?
It was amazing. It was eye-opening. I loved it. I think the people here are amazing. I think for the most part, perfect strangers in the business world have each other's back. I think everybody wants each other to succeed, and you can see that and you can feel it within the community. And but the double-edged sword was, why haven't I done this sooner?
Sure.
That was it. That was the only downside, is why did it take me so long to just plant myself into this atmosphere? Because that's all it takes, is just, you don't need an invite. You just go and you experience, and you tend to meet new people, and they become people you see more often, and you get to know each other by on a first name basis, or more about people. You expand your friend group, essentially.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
It's a very, I've felt more welcome now as an adult in this community than I did, you know, growing up in the community, if that makes sense. Or, you know.
No, 100%.
Going through school totally and does. Stuff, you know.
I mean, that's Chris and I's relationship in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And if I'm thinking back, honestly, most of the people I have in my adult life right now are people I met through Joe Bean.
Oh. Yeah. A lot of people.
And, you know, they started off as customers, and then it naturally migrated into other things. And now we're doing a podcast with Chris Lindstrom,
right.
And, you know, and Wade and I, who we only worked together at Joe Bean for maybe a month or something. Like, it wasn't long. And it just, that relationship, we just kept running into each other still. And I hope
that
this continues.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's kind of the encapsulation of something we've been talking a lot about on Lunchador, from behind the glass to a lot of the different, to behind the studio door. And then on, you know, Refined Taste and Food About Town, talking about the importance of showing up in person, the importance of supporting the things that you value, and that how much it means to other people that you show up in person.
Mm-hmm.
It changes everything. Like, you can intellectually think about things as much as you want, but showing up in person,
right?
It changes everything. It changes the relationship you have with others. It changes your relationship with a place. It changes everything being there.
Absolutely.
So on that heartfelt philosophical note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
And we're back after that nice break. Thanks for that, Chris.
Absolutely.
We're well rested and caffeinated and ready to go.
Oh, very nicely caffeinated.
So that's a great way. Aubrey, tell us about this coffee we've been sipping on.
So this is a honey processed Mexican bean.
Side note, I don't think we mentioned the brand. This is Blue Heron Coffee.
Yes.
Where can people learn more about Blue Heron? And where can they find your stuff right now?
So right now, I am so new to this, such a baby to this industry.
It's all right.
We're breaking it first, guys.
It's very much in person. I do have an Instagram account, which is in its infancy as well. But I'm really just trying to get the word out essentially in person. I have a coffee cart. I'm a certified barista through the Specialty Coffee Association. And that's where pretty much all started, as I wanted to prepare your espresso beverages. But then I loved learning about coffee, and I loved the science that goes behind roasting. And I took a roasting course as well.
That's awesome. And just as a reminder for everybody, that's Blue Heron Coffee ROC on Instagram. Follow along, and you can learn all about the coffee we are going to talk about right now. And I just finished my sips. Really delightful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The honey process seems to be a crowd pleaser for sure. I've had a lot of people tell me they would normally use cream and sugar with their coffee and don't feel like they have to. With this, it's just a nice sweet, you know, flavor that they get from it without anything added. It's not flavored coffee. It is the way honey processed. It's not honey added to it. A lot of people think that it has something to do with honey.
Sure.
But the process of the honey process is you take the mucilage off of the cherry and let it naturally dry onto the seed. And just that, you know, essentially, I don't want to say fermentation, but
it is fermentation.
100%.
It just creates the sweetness just really kind of pops. And that's why, you know, that's part of the reason why it's called a honey process. So,
and what region is this from? Cause
I am horrible at pronouncing, but it's like La Haya. I would have to look it up to actually get the pronunciation.
Well, if you want to look it up for a second, sure. So I will say, like, this is very integrated, so this isn't, like, explosively fruity. Like, it still carries that, like, you know, chocolatey, you know, comforting flavors of what most people understand to be specialty Mexican coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have a depth to it.
I got a lot of, like, peanut butter almost
off
of it, which, but it was a bright peanut butter. Not like Congo usually has that type of, Congo or Brazil usually. I haven't had one in a while, but it was a very nice, warm, like you described there. And I would have expected this to be from one of the bigger regions.
So the region is the Huatzuco.
Okay.
Huatzuco. How do you spell that?
Huatusco.
Yeah, I would have said about the same.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this kind of is like almost a stereotypical Mexican coffee with a little bit more depth.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it isn't like explosively fruity. It isn't like outside the box of what you'd taste. Right. But I think for a lot of people, this is a great introductory specialty coffee because it's still, you know what it tastes like? It tastes like coffee.
Yeah, it's very approachable.
Yeah, especially for somebody that might not have had specialty coffee before.
Absolutely.
Must be a great one to serve to people now that you're getting in front of them in person.
Yes. And actually, currently we're serving it at a cafe that I'm working in.
Oh, awesome.
Part-time. And we're serving it as Kyoto cold brew.
Ooh. Ooh,
very fun.
And
makes a mean Kyoto.
And where is this?
This is Rococo.
Okay.
Down nice.
In Mercon, Maine, the Sibley building.
We're well versed in Rococo.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's a nice little spot that's been built out in there.
Yes.
And that Kyoto style, man, I remember the first time I tried that. Man, stuff was jet fuel.
Yes.
So much caffeine.
Very.
And you just watch it.
Yes. Very scientific too. You know, you got to keep it at the 1 drip per second is what I'm told. So, you know, looks really cool. A Kyoto tower is
it's just such
like
a great
really cool
piece.
Looking.
Yeah,
yes,
it is.
And I've been getting a lot of positive feedback on that.
How many times have you thought about buying a Kyoto tower, Chris?
Oh God. I remember like the first time I had it, this was again, we refer back to the Joe Bean days very wistfully, you know, the old cafe days.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where I had it the first time. And it was just this stunning piece, and this was not, this wasn't a smaller one. This was like full height. And it was, you know, the ice and, you know, you just watched it going like, oh God, at some point I'm going to do something dumb. I'm going to do something like getting one of those or something weird.
Oh yeah. It's very, it's very peaceful watching it too. Just, you know, like something that you would like those, things that you put on a
what
desk.
Are those called? A desk?
Oh yeah.
I could just watch like the drip.
It's like a metronome ball.
Yeah. It's very fun. And so we got this coffee, we got the Honey Process Mexico.
Yes.
Why don't you talk a second about like how are you roasting right now? And what was the process like learning how to roast? I mean, you're only a couple years in from trying specialty for the first time and now you're roasting. How is that process learning how to do that?
So, you know, full transparency, currently I'm sending my, profiles to be roasted.
Okay.
But I've been to the facility, a few different times out in Cleveland, met everybody, you know, there and really nice people. Actually, the story of how I got hooked up with that facility specifically is wild.
And what place are you working with?
So it is called First Crack.
Oh, awesome.
Roasting facility.
Okay.
And the owner of that business has three different roasting facilities. There's one in St. Louis, Denver, and then Cleveland. He's partnered up with the Specialty Coffee Association as well as an instructor. And that's how I got his phone number, was looking up how can I learn how to be a barista.
Mm-hmm.
When I started going to these cafes, I was like, I love it here. I don't like leaving. You know, I can't spend the entire day, you know, sipping a cappuccino and having croissants until I can't.
Lord knows we've all tried.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm like, I want to do this. This is, you know, I want to see how this can work. And the advice I got was just start. So I looked up how to become certified. And I thought that was going to, you know, do it. That was going to solidify a position somewhere. Someone would be in need of a barista, no doubt.
For sure.
And found the website for Specialty Coffee Association, picked the first phone number that I saw to call. And it turns out it was the person who owns these facilities, you know, out of state area code and everything with the phone number. He lives in Victor.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So pretty much like so many different connections to like Strong Hospital. Like the story there was they just moved here.
Oh, wow.
His
That's
wife
awesome.
Was transferred to Strong Pediatric Center.
Oh.
And they literally live like 25 minutes from my house. So said, I want to take this course, you know, still even thought take this course in Cleveland or whatever. Mm-hmm. Ended up, he had a, he built out a facility, you know, off his house.
In Victor.
I took the course there, did the 3-day intensive practical examinations. He sent over a bunch of literature. I'd never read it.
I hope he's listening right now.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
and you know what? I can't lie either, because he asked me, did you get to read? And I said, I didn't read any of it. He's like, that's okay. We can go over a lot of it together. I just get into, you know, if there's a lot to do, my thing is just, I can't do any of it. Once I got through the practical examinations, I had to recalibrate an espresso grinder. And pull a shot in like under 5 minutes. So the grinder was just like twisted and then, go ahead and get this, essentially dialed in. And your first experience with espresso and you're on a timed test was very intimidating, but I got through it and passed those tests and then went home and essentially combed through all of the literature to take the writtens,
okay.
All of the written tests. I had asked him, where do you see me going? Where do you see me going with this? And based on the questions I was asking and things I was interested in and just the skills that I was showing, he said, I think you should roast.
Hmm.
I didn't disagree.
I was going to say, what did you think of when he said that?
I was flattered. I really was, because I thought that was like, not just the next step up, but maybe like on a different plane, you know, like a whole different plane. So it's just my nature to know why things happen the way they happen, ask questions and try to get a different perspective on things. So I guess it had to do with some of those questions I was asking him and things we touched upon during the first course, the barista course, that led him to say, plus I'm Italian. I used to be self-conscious about, I would say my schnoz, my large nose.
I don't know anything about that.
No, you don't.
We're on radio, guys. Yeah. So.
I used to be like, oh, you know, I'm so self-conscious of it and it's just the bane of my existence. I can just see it as I'm, you know, talking to people. I just feel like it pulled through for me. I took well to the tasting, the recognizing a lot of different nuanced flavors and aromas and things like that. So I think, honestly, how you said earlier, did you choose coffee or coffee chose you? I think it's a little bit of I feel like I was made for coffee. I haven't taken the super tester test that we had talked about earlier, but...
Yeah, it's...
Super taster.
Well, and when we were talking about it earlier, you mentioned that like when spirits kind of just taste like straight jet fuel to you.
Yeah.
That's like a great indicator of that kind of thing where the sensitivity is high.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder, like, generally do bitter things become overpowering for you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's
like it's.
Those are huge indicators of...
Really?
Like, I have a physical reaction to something jittery or bitter.
Yeah, that, those are huge indicators of that. Yeah. So, like, where you have a more sensitive palate to bitterness and to, like, high proofs or spicy things. Mm-hmm. Those are very common with that. So, the very strong possibility that that's where you sit, which does help isolate... flavors very well. It lets you pick up certain things, but it also is its own struggle to get through bitterness, to get through other things. Like you have to still be able to isolate that out and
to then get a good picture of,
Which is kind of the challenge sometimes too. So we're tasting this honey processed Mexican. You've had this roasted. Do you have an overall direction you're going with this?
Yes. Actually, I've been thinking a lot about that. You know, I'm still in development. I wanted to get out there. I wanted to see if there was any interest in what I could offer. So I'm not fully formed yet, but my mission really is education. Having something that can draw people together, even just to spend time together and have some fun. If it's coffee that brings people together to do that, great. I've actually been talking about starting a coffee roasting co-op for new businesses, businesses that are in the development stage, wanting to start something but not knowing
where to go.
I think that is an interesting concept. I know I would have loved to be able to roast something consistently on myself. Currently, like the capital needs to be there.
So tell us how did you come up with this profile for these coffees that we've tasting and that I've had? Like,
what's during the roasting course is when I actually roasted like 12 different profiles of the same. We did a washed Colombian the first day and roasted it, you know, many different ways. One of the ways we roasted it was a light roast, but a longer development, really trying to increase mouthfeel, but keep all the, you know, not lose any of the attributes of the region and things like that. So that's the roast I actually settled on after cupping, you know, 12 different roasts that we did. We did a light roast of that. And it's just about finding what works, just cupping a lot, roasting to different, you know, degrees, but I know that some people don't like to roast past a certain point. I think that you can here and there, if your goal is to have mouthfeel, you're going to need to roast medium at least to get a little bit of that, you know. And some people don't like the brightness of a light roast, even though that's where you're going to get a lot of, you're going to get a lot of those nuanced attributes in a light roast. So I like them all. I like all types of roasts. So I feel like certain regions and I don't know.
They all lend themselves to different stuff.
They really do.
And
you can, yeah, you can really.
That was our last episode, was talking about the hoop and the zero bypass that was coming up.
Okay.
And then we got into, you know, Wade being a very devoted roaster here, talking about how he roasts and how he approaches things and how that translates to the way we should be drinking this coffee. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great way to come back to you, is what is, you having developing profiles and things for coffees, what is your primary drinking method, or just your daily? What do you do? What's your setup?
So, what's funny is I do, as soon as I was done with the course that I took, I went out and bought a prosumer, espresso machine. Oh yeah. Just right away. Decided I was going to not only have that to, you know,
right,
keep the skill going, but also it would save money, because then I wouldn't be, you know, going to the cafe every day. And but I still go to the cafe.
I was
going to
say, did that slow you down?
No, not at all. Not at all. I almost spent 6 months, I think, was before I used it for the first time. I was like, it's just sitting on my counter. I need to actually use this.
So what did you end up with, and where did you buy it from?
So I ended up with a Profitec Pro 600.
Oh, nice.
We got it with the flow control at first. At first. We actually took it off.
Ooh.
Yeah. We decided against it. A lot of moving parts.
Yep.
You know, we still have it, so we can... I think it's going to be utilized down the road. I really do. But at this stage, just trying to pull consistent shots.
For sure.
Just want to have.
That's another variable in there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. bought that, ordered it from Whole Latte Love. And that was.
Rochester's best kept non-secret at this point.
I mean, I still don't think people know that it's here.
Isn't like
that
weird?
They don't. We know, it's crazy. We know it's here. I mean, hell, you know it's here.
We actually drove to it to, like, think we can just go shopping.
Right? Yeah.
And so that was just not.
So if you don't know, I did tech support for them for long time. And that would happen all the time. People would show up at the office.
Yeah, and, like, knock and on the door.
Be like, where do we do? And I think, actually, I did that before I applied to work there.
Ah, okay.
Because I had probably heard through the grapevine and was like, I want to go buy an espresso machine. Let me go look and see. And, you know,
espresso
somebody showed up at the locked door.
Yeah, exactly.
But so I'm curious, though, because when that flow control came out, we had a lot of iterations of the sales for that. There was a time it was only limited and offered to people who had already bought prosumers from us.
Okay.
And then there was a time when you bought it and they just shipped out with that. Now, did you get the standard? We always called it the mushroom. I forget.
The mushroom. Yeah. No.
So you called them.
Yeah. I don't think it came. Yeah. I think it just came with the flow. Like when we ordered it, the flow control was offered as like a bonus.
Right.
But the mushroom wasn't with it.
So what did you, so how did you decide then not to just like keep the flow control at a certain point? So we should probably go into, so on your espresso machine, there's the E61 head. It's this standard piece that you've all seen on most espresso machines, short of the big, consumer level consumer level ones.
Okay.
And there's a valve up there that, I don't even know where it came from. Somewhere along the way, this valve was modified so that you can open and close it, thus increasing or decreasing the amount of water hitting your group head there.
Right.
So you know, it's another variable other than your grind size, your amount of coffee, your temperature, all of those things. So now you can modify the amount of water at any given second there, right?
And it's all, it's manual. So you're doing like, essentially you could do a limited flow pre-infusion.
Exactly.
And then raise it as then, you know, you can pause and then go big and go all the way through.
Yep. It's like a spiral. It's a threaded valve.
Yeah. Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So, how did you decide at that point that you wanted to get rid of it, so to speak, and go back to the standard one? And did you even know that that was a possibility?
We did. We did know it was a possibility. We did as much research as we possibly could before purchasing, and knew that that was essentially like an add-on, where it's not typical of, it wasn't typical of the equipment prior. So we knew we were, what they put on could come off, you know.
Right.
It just was intimidating, you know, trying to keep a lot of figures going in my head at the same time, weighing your shot, timing your shot, making sure you've got enough PSI, or, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the amount of variables is so intimidating. I mean, hell, like we were just doing, you know, did a quick pour over, you know, of your coffee before we sat down. And the amount of variables just in that, relatively simple in comparison. But the amount
big
of
differences,
right? Huge differences, but the variables in espresso are staggering and it can be overwhelming. So, you know, you're working on, you know, learning how to pour more consistent shots. You're doing that. Do you still drink, like, do you drink batch out of a machine? Do you do pour overs at home, or how do you do that right now?
So I drink batch from Ugly.
Yeah.
Pretty much every day.
Fair.
And partly because I actually do like a half calf kind of thing. So they've got the decaf on drip as well as whatever they're kind of got a spotlight on. And I'll usually grab whoever they're spotlighting for the, I think it's Blind Tiger right now.
Yeah, and it has been pretty tasty.
Yeah.
And they've had some in the last, you know, I'd say 4 roasters. Like, this wasn't my favorite, but there's been some in recent months that were just like stars.
I think the one that sticks out for me was Touchy. I want to say Touchy had an Ethiopian, possibly.
Yeah, I really enjoyed.
That was really good.
I really enjoyed those, and I think it was
Loveless,
which was, I thought that was a star.
Yeah.
Really adored that. But I think it's one of the great things about going to a shop like that is you can start to learn what you like.
Mm-hmm.
Because like if you go to a shop that has a profile, like, hey, Fuego has a profile, right? You know, when you go there, you're going to get, you know, well-sourced coffees. You're going to get it in the Fuego style.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Joe Bean, you're going to get well-sourced coffees done in their style. But the great thing about going to Ugly Duck as a, you know, multi-roaster place is you get to really learn, hey, what do I like about this? And you get to see all these different ideas.
Right. And they come from, you know, different regions of the country. And if you find yourself somewhere and they might have a brick and mortar, and, you know, that's like something that is comforting to know, that you could be like, oh, you... Or are they different places use the same
coffees? Have you gotten to do any tourism these days? Or do you have places you're looking at going to just because now you know they exist?
Some. I have not gotten to do any tourism. But we are planning a trip to Boston in a couple of weeks.
Ooh, that's a fun one.
I was going to say, and who's on your list there?
Well, right now, all I can think of is what we're going to do. We're going to see Seth Meyers, and I'm very excited about that.
Oh, awesome.
So,
that's fun.
But I was told to look out for someone specifically he's like a very, very high up in the specialty coffee world, has a cafe.
Okay.
Very.
Yeah, Boston's coffee scene has changed drastically in the last 5 years. I remember going before, and it was a struggle to find.
I remember that too.
To find specialty places. I mean, we're talking, you know, neighborhoods that are so dense with restaurants and so many things. I had a buddy there. We used, you know, been going for a long time. And in the last few years, now you can go to so many places. And then there's neighborhoods where you can get, oh, you're actually getting a, you know, a Japanese coffee roaster, you know, it's so a Japanese origin coffee roaster. Yeah. And you can get all sorts of different stuff around the city, which is amazing.
Right. Well, that's great. So, you know, I don't want to stray too far. You know, we're trying to highlight you a little bit here and what you're doing there. Where is Blue Heron going? What are your goals in the next little bit? And then I've got a fun question for us.
Oh, sure. So right now, Blue Heron is going where anybody needs it. I am hoping to do more events. I actually did a pop-up at a friend's business, Crumpets. I don't know if you guys have been to
Absolutely. Crumpets. Absolutely. Yep. They're killing it over there. The quality's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. So great. And Evan and Bill are extremely amazing people and opened their business to my large cart. so I really, really appreciate that. Took up about a fourth of the restaurant. And it was a great experience. It was my first pop-up ever. So that was my first ever experience, and they were so sweet. And I loved hanging out with them for the day, and I got to make some coffees for people. Events, birthday parties, you know, bridal showers, baby showers, weddings, that kind of thing. That would be great. Looking into popping up at some local farmers markets. You know, kind of the huge. And then I'm in the early stages of talking about possibly being able to roast on a new machine. It's called a Typhoon. I don't know if you've heard
about
this.
Not by name, no.
It's an electric. They have both kinds, but they do offer a fully electric roasting machine. I've heard amazing things about it.
Oh, you know what? I have heard about that. Yep.
And I would never have the the capital for something like that currently, but I might have an opportunity to use one. And that's what I would love to do. And from there, I'd like to also offer education as well. You know, like we were talking about kids that are of the age of drinking coffee, going to these places, not really thinking about what they're drinking. Education in that regard, but also I think it's great to maybe train new baristas.
And that's, you know, that's, it's just great to have that as a focus. I think it was one or two episodes back we talked primarily about education.
Mm-hmm.
And ours was just at expanding the industry mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And bringing, you know, new people into the fold. You know, you have, you know, your coworker of 15 years who's drinking, you know, their triple vanilla latte from Starbucks every day.
Right.
And they're curious why you're not, you mm-hmm. know, or you've got my coworker who runs out of coffee for the day with her Keurig. And she's like, do you have an extra pot? I was like, no, but I've got a thermos, you know, do you want some of this? And then she goes, this is really good. It's like, how much do you tell them about that? And how much do they really want to know?
Right.
So to have that be a focus of what you're doing is really a great thing.
It's so exciting when you get the feeling that someone does want to know, they want to know more. And I can tell who's going to want to sit around and talk about coffee or at least be interested in learning about what I've learned. And that's really the thing, is I just want to share what I've learned so far. And hopefully that grows.
I feel like we could go on for another hour here with this specifically.
No, absolutely.
So what segment we've been trying to, you know, incorporate a lot is what's on the bag. So we've brought in a lot of coffees and looked at the bags and talked about what they are and different things there, and what's missing, what we should do. And your Blue Heron bags, first of all, are very cute.
They're baby bags.
They're baby bags. Well, and the ones that I got were very baby. They were like little sample bags, which were cute. But so I'm a teacher. In my teacher's lounge, these Blue Heron bags popped up, and I saw Mexican on one. I was like, this shouldn't be in this teacher's lounge right now. And so I brought it home and drank it and was very surprised that this came out of my teacher's lounge, which is what led me down my rabbit hole to meeting you. Yeah. So here's the question. In your ideal roasting scenario, what is it that you have on your bags?
You mean like how are they...
Like, design? I walk into a store, what am I going to see on your bag?
Okay. Wood paneling.
Yeah.
All for it. Big Love time. It, right? Oh, yeah. Mid-century. I would go for the mid-century aesthetic, a painting that you would see in, like, your parents' or your grandparents' den of a heron flying over a pond. Just peaceful. Watercolor. Almost kind of aesthetic. That's like that smoky blue.
Mm-hmm.
If we're just talking aesthetics of the bag.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, aesthetics is a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost just like capturing a photo in nature of, but kind of having a like a watercolor or painting vibe to it.
And then... Let's dive in. What information also, how would you want to display it? What's important to you, or what do you think is important to your customers?
What I had thought was talking too much about the lot specifically on the bag can actually make somebody who doesn't think they know a lot about coffee kind of turn them away because they're intimidated by that. So essentially I want is only what needs to be on the bag and then like a QR code that they can scan if they want to learn more about the coffee to make it more approachable to everybody. Because I don't know if you're aware of how people talk about coffee snobs.
We might be aware.
A little bit aware.
We resemble that remark.
Right. So I just feel like there is that bias sometimes that it's hard for, I feel like everybody can drink specialty coffee. Everybody can learn a little bit about it if they want to. They can still drink it if they don't care about it. It's still great coffee, but I think learning about it is a choice, and I loved learning about it. I would love advocating for the small farms and farmers that maybe don't see as much because they're part of a co-op or they're not a part of like a single origin coffee roasting. They don't have that. What is that called? Like the relationship. They don't have a relationship with like buyers. Yeah, exactly. I'd like to give some, exposure to them specifically, but to have that, to have everything on a bag, I think if you have the option of, everybody's got a phone on them, to put it in a QR code and give them the information if they want it.
It's there if they want it.
It's there if you want it.
Yeah, yeah, we've become, I know you've become a big advocate of the QR, getting that extra info.
I think it's great. I think the education piece is, something I've wanted to pursue in multiple different ways. And I think that is a non-intrusive way of, I love the way you put it. You don't need an invite.
Right.
It's there waiting for you. You just have to pick it up.
Right. Exactly. So. And, with the education aspect of it, there's a lot of people that will put down coffee if they don't see like the organic.
So,
and it's like what I've learned about coffee in just the past year and a half is, we have these preconceived notions of what we're willing to buy. Sure. It's got to be fair trade. It's got to be organic, you know, like these buzzwords. And a lot of the coffee industry doesn't fall into that, or it's not that, because like they can't afford the labels.
Sure.
It's not that it's not organic. It's just they can't afford to say it's organic. So I'd like to kind of like open people's eyes a little. Like, don't put that down just because it doesn't have the organic sign on it. Because most coffee is naturally organic. They can't afford pesticides.
Yeah. And that's really great. And so I think we're coming up on our time here. And Aubrey, we're so thankful that you showed up today. Your perspective has been refreshing. And I think I can speak for everybody here that we're excited to see where you're going.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me and listening to me. I know I probably, with this late night coffee,
my mind
kind of wandered a little bit here and there. But
no, absolutely. Not a problem. And if people want to open their eyes to Blue Heron Coffee, go to Blue Heron Coffee ROC on Instagram. Pay attention to pop-ups coming up, maybe the chance to buy some beans in person over at the Mercantile or in other locations. Really excited to see where things are going. Aaron, where can people follow you and what's coming up on Level Up?
Oh, I should know our tags. We are on Level Up Coffee Podcast on all your streaming and podcast services there. Our Instagram is Level Up WNY, I believe, on Instagram. Go ahead and shoot us a DM there. And I think we're also on Substack still. And someone will read your message and get back to you. Do all the things. Like, subscribe, do all those things for us.
Yeah, and also, if you want to support the show directly, go to levelupcoffee.captivate.fm/support. You can throw a tip at the boys or subscribe at $2 a month to support the show directly. As we talked about, showing up in person matters. Supporting the people you enjoy directly matters. And if you want to learn more about Lunchador Podcast Network, go to lunchador.org and follow and learn more about amazing shows here in Rochester. Stay tuned for more Level Up Coffee. The next time we'll be here.
And enjoy your coffee.
See ya.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Roasty toasty goodness.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.